At Humana, our Medicare Advantage plans give you coverage and care you can count on, along with guided support to help you feel your best. You could have a plan with a $0 premium or an all-in-one plan that may include medical and prescription coverage, as well as routine dental, vision, and hearing. Learn more at GetHumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal.
Question for you. Would you rather pay $150 a month or $15 a month to work out with the same high-quality gym equipment? At Planet Fitness, you can get top-tier equipment for $15 a month. Plus, save $28 or more when you join now during our Strong Choice Sale. Our weights weigh the same, you just don't pay the same. Enjoy free fitness training and 24-hour access at most clubs, all in the judgment-free zone. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month, cancel anytime. Deal ends October 10th. See club for details.
Hard to force a Julie Andrews vibrato.
I thought it was great.
No, thanks. Wow.
I did too.
It felt
you're still
too.
There with her. You're still with it, her. She's still with no. you now.
It felt bad to do, but I am glad that it. I'm glad
people
you liked
know
it.
Exactly who you were.
That's for true. Sure. It's the most her song. And also, I'm the most me. This is Jordan. For Two Chunks and a Hunk, the podcast that you're listening to right now. It's Jordan.
I'm Doge. Reader's Digest Who's is there? Too good for no- who Reader's Digest is too good for knock knock jokes. So they're just regular jokes today.
Oh.
Wow. They've moved on.
And this one is an intelligent, scathing critique of modern culture. I'm Doge. What do you get when you play new age music backwards?
Old age music.
Good music?
New age music. It's the same. It's bad music that only young people like, huh? Dang. Reader's Digest. What kind of mystical creature keeps musical time best?
Phoenix. Loch Ness Monster.
A metronome.
Got it in one.
Yeah.
Bing, bing. A metronome.
Yeah. He really
Carter,
he takes,
tell him what he won.
He takes care of his cuticles. He likes the way that his hair looks when it's coiffed and he dresses nice.
What's wrong with that? He showers upwards of thrice a week.
Yeah.
Did you say my name? Yeah, I thought you wanted something from me.
Oh, I said we Carter, tell do. Him what he's won.
Oh, what we want? I thought you asked what I wanted.
No, tell him what
hey,
he won.
Carter,
he got
tell, metronome, tell, right? Tell him what he want.
You get tell him what he want.
What he really won. You get a rank you very much, a bit. You don't get $1.2 billion, but Inside Out 2 does. I'm fascinated with this. I've always been fascinated with how much money movies make because it's like, you know, Denis Villeneuve was talking about Dune stuff, so it was kind of tense. If you didn't make enough money, yada, yada, all that stuff. Inside Out 2, $1.2 billion, meaning it is fifth all-time worldwide grossing animated film. I have 11 for
wow.
you, and it's by the numbers. Doesn't matter what website it's from. It actually does. But these are legitimate numbers. This is thenumbers.com. Box Office Mojo would say the same. It was a little bit harder to find the specific category, but I've got 11. Let's go back and forth. You get three strikes. See as many of these as you can get as possible. What are the top 11 highest grossing animated films of all time?
Got it.
Okay.
Who went first last time? Do we remember?
I don't.
Nope. Jordan, you go ahead. Go first.
Toy Story 4.
Bing, 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 number 7.
Got it.
Inside Out 2 has made more money than Toy Story 4. $1.07
wow.
billion.
Good for Inside Out 2, man.
Big time.
Super Mario Brothers.
Good call.
Bing, 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 number 2, which
good
came out
answer.
Last year.
Good answer.
$1.36 billion.
Wow.
So 150 million more than Inside Out 2. Inside Out 2 might still have a chance, but to dethrone number one will be pretty tough.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Number one has 1.45 billion.
Number one. Cars 3.
Not there, my friend.
Okay.
Bong, bong.
I think Cars, is it the merchandise that made Cars like the most profitable?
Okay. Many people have said that Cars is the Star Wars of Pixar, you know?
Yeah. Ooh,
I hear it.
A lot of people say that. Many people.
Oh, got it.
Pioneer Woman.
Yeah. Pioneer
Fella. Man.
Pioneer Children. Pioneer Pets. All of them.
Frozen. They got to get all those pies out of their ears.
Bing, bing, bing. Number
That's
three.
Number one. Oh.
Number three, $1.27 billion. Inside Out 2 will likely pass Frozen 2.
The movie's so nice they did it twice.
Frozen 2. That's the number one. Bing, bing, bing. 1.45 billion.
Gotta be.
I don't feel like he should get that because you said Frozen 2.
I was going to do it anyway.
Gave it to him.
He was going to do it anyway.
That's what he would say if he was waiting to hear what you said on accident.
Do it anyway.
My joke about the movie so nice they named it they made it twice started mid sentence for him. There's proof in the pudding.
There's proof in the pudding.
We'll have to check the tapes.
There's proof in the pudding.
Well, it's true. This is what he said. They have it right here.
Thanks, Putin.
Vladimir Putin. Putin.
Despicable Me 2.
Bong bong.
I meant to say 3.
That's a strike for you or two strikes? One strike? One strike.
I believe that's his first.
None yet. None, because I meant to say 3.
That's your Was strike. It? That's a strike, my friend. Okay. You said 2.
Okay.
Despicable Me 3.
Bing, bing, bing. Number 9. You each have a strike.
See, it's crazy because I already said that one.
You each have a strike.
Trolls.
Nice.
World Tour.
Bong bong. It's not in the $1 billion club.
I don't know which, how many trolls is there are or which ones are which.
Two, I think. Three? Two?
There's at least three, right?
Really? There's Trolls, Trolls World Tour, and Trolls Universe Tour.
Getting band back together.
I think there's Trolls 2. I think there's Trolls. There's Country Trolls Jamboree. Stop. Obviously.
Amazing. You know what? Sing 2.
Bong bong.
Okay. I just felt it. I don't know. I felt it.
So far we have Frozen 2 at number 1. Number 2 was a Super Mario Brothers movie. Number 3 was Frozen. Number 4, we don't know. Number 5. I mean, what's funny is you could guess Inside Out 2. It's a part of this process. We don't have number 6. We've got number 7, Toy Story 4. Don't have 8. Have number 9, Despicable Me 3. Don't have 10. Don't have 11. So basically, we got the majority almost here.
Jordan, how many have you? Are you struck out?
No, he's got second one.
Minions.
Bing, bing, bing. Number 6.
I have heard Despicable Me 4 is pretty bad.
Yeah, I have too, unfortunately.
You don't care.
I'm sad
just
when
unfortunate
the movie's not
that
good.
You heard about it. Oh, okay.
It's unfortunate that somebody tried to talk to me about Despicable Me 4.
I like the first Despicable Me. I think that's a good movie.
It's pretty fun. It's pretty fun.
I don't know, man. I'm struggling here. The animated Grinch one.
Bong bong. Doja would take a couple shots.
Ice Age, Dawn of the Dinosaurs.
Bong bong. One more.
It's way too old, right? I mean, they're going to get passed by all the new movies, aren't they? Just because tickets are more expensive?
The oldest movie on here is from 2010.
Oh, that's pretty old.
Wow. Frozen? What's from 2010?
Frozen's 2013.
Which one is it?
I'm not going to tell you. Because you stopped
a strike. 3.
Bing, bing. Yeah. Got it. Keep going, dude. You going to get it all?
Probably. Yeah. And it goes a little something like this.
Do you think Coco would be there? I feel like Coco didn't blow up until it left theaters.
No, I don't think Coco.
Oh, dude. I know the answer.
Zootopia.
Bing, bing. Number 11.
Wow.
Still going. Still going.
Okay. Okay.
Moana. That was the one that I was thinking.
Bong Bong. If you remember the last time we played Ranky Very Much, I said that Inside Out 2 was very likely going to pass this number one Pixar grossing movie. Do you remember what that was?
It
was
Incredibles. Monsters University.
Incredibles 2.
Incredibles 2.
Yeah, we talked about it. Number 6 was Minions. Number 4, Toy Story 4. Toy Story 3, you got them all. Only one you didn't get. Number 10, Finding Dory. Yeah.
It's a real bummer to me that a lot of the worse iterations of the better movies are the ones that made all the money.
I think Finding Dory's box office gross is a referendum on how good Finding Nemo is.
Yeah, for sure.
You know what I mean? Where it's like, people are like, that was so good, I got to see the other one.
Same with Incredibles 2. Like, Incredibles 1 is amazing. I think that, like, I never saw Frozen 2, but I've heard a similar sentiment about just not nearly as good as the first one. And all of these conversations ever do is make me sad that, like, Shrek and How to Train Your Dragon and Monsters, Inc. and Finding Nemo, and like that all of those aren't the highest grossing at, which, I mean, these will all be replaced in 10 years because ticket prices go up.
Sure. Like, sure. And a lot of those
Despicable Me 5 is going to do dollars.
Were good enough to make, you know, sequels that were worse than them that made more than them. It's because they were so good.
Yeah.
You know? Sure. So it's like, it's still a testament to doing well.
Sure.
But yeah, I thought I'd talk about that at first.
In the realm of sequels, sequels to things that are as good, if not better, than the original. We are coming to you with a reminder today that we are, of course, taking part in a different podcast with some of our great and incredibly talented friends. This is a D&D actual play podcast. Heavy on the play. Lots of fun and silliness going on there. Maybe some tears. I'm not going to judge you. I'm not going to tell you you can't feel while you listen.
I have felt.
That's.
We'll laugh at you if you cry about it.
Yeah, I'll make fun
of
you.
It's just a game.
I'll give you a swirly.
It's imaginary. It's pretend. You shouldn't cry about pretend things.
If you haven't been checking in with our social media, then you might not know that we are finally allowed to release the name of the podcast, which is Imagine Dungeons. And we're very excited to have locked that name down. We can't wait to share this with you. I mean, we are...
Yeah, so excited.
It's amazing.
Weirdly, in two different group texts with the exact same six people and talking in both venues.
Oh, yeah.
About how excited we are.
Yeah, we are.
That is true.
For this podcast and how proud we are of the work that we're doing. So we can't wait for you to listen. But one of the things we can't wait for you to hear is the music that Doge has worked so hard to craft put together for this adventure.
Unbelievable.
And we know that you're going to love it. And the other thing that we think you're going to love is what we have planned for you today in honor of the great and delicious music that's going to be playing in your ears while you listen to Imagine Dungeons. We've put together sort of a little love story to music in our lives, music that has changed and shifted us.
It's a love story, baby, just podcast.
Yeah. That's another way we could have started the episode today for sure. I think that
just nobody asks me. I'm just over here looking at jokes.
You're not part of it. so we're gonna do something a little different today. We've each brought three albums that changed our lives. These aren't necessarily our favorites of all time or the ones that we think are the best ever. Just these are albums that changed our lives, changed the trajectory of our tastes, or maybe even us as people. And we just want to spend a little time kind of talking about it. This is something that as friends, this is a conversation that would be pretty normal for us to have anyway. But we like to share these moments with you. So I think the best way to do this is I have mine kind of separated out by era of my life on accident. But I think that just going like album one, album two, album three, like album one around the horn, album two around the horn.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
And then also
mine are also pretty divided out by that. Yeah. So that's interesting.
We also have a fourth album we've each brought, which is something that we're currently
just bopping
now,
just doing now.
So I think that'll be really fun. You might leave with some recommendations. In my case, one album that I would say maybe don't listen to, but that's okay. I don't mind starting since it was my idea and take the pressure off hit the pressure release valve a little bit. I want to take you back in time, if I may, to...
Can I roll for perception?
You can roll for, honestly, whatever you'd like. The year was 2004. And it was the fall of 2004 to be specific. And, a little 9-year-old, 10-year-old Jordan. I was raised, only listening to like contemporary Christian music. It was just like Stephen Curtis Chapman and smooth jazz up until like the third grade was like pretty much all I ever heard. I got really into a Christian pop band called Jump 5 because I wasn't allowed to listen to like cool music. That was how
hey,
I
take it back.
Expressed
take it back.
Myself.
They're cool.
And then, you know, around the third grade, suddenly it was like 80s music was the only thing that I ever listened to all of a sudden. And then my cousins burned me a CD. That CD was
CD burning, dude. What a process that was,
dude. Especially because we had to do it at my grandpa's house, and he spelled the name of the band wrong on the printed label for the CD.
I want to hear this.
But he burned me. Cousins burned me a copy of "The Anatomy of the Tongue in Cheek" by Reliant K. I fell in love. Sadie Hawkins Dance didn't work, so I couldn't listen to that song for like the first year that I listened to Reliant K. But then.
Dude, before you get deep in this, I just want to point out that if I were a teen or young adult now, not in a relationship, I would have no means by which to impress a potential partner because nobody burns CDs anymore.
I think you just make a playlist and then share it with them.
That feels so much worse than it's like a burned CD is like a treasure, like when a crow likes you they find a treasure and they're like, here, I found this thing for you. That's what a burned CD feels like to me. Like, I don't know. I don't know what I would do now.
You ever get a burned CD that didn't work in like your car?
Yeah.
It just like wouldn't play people, it?
It's like, oh, it's a data DVD. I have to put it in my computer and double click on each track.
Right.
Oh no.
Yep.
Happens sometimes. I got some great music from friends burning CDs. Anyway.
Sure. Me too.
Reliant K kickstarted a love of like punk sound and electric guitars and specifically harmonies that has just followed me forever. I think it started with listening to, you know, Stephen Curtis Chapman had a lot of harmonies and then listening to things like the Eagles with my dad or whatever, but getting to the point with Reliant K where it was like harmonies in punk sounding music was like shattering my brain for like forever as a little kid. So fall of 2024.
It's like choir, but badass.
But it's like sick though. Fall of 2024, I get off the bus every day for like 2 weeks and sprint to my mailbox.
2004.
Sorry, what did I say? 2024?
24, yeah. You got big plans?
2004. Just
jumping off the bus,
I'm just gonna run to my mailbox.
I'm going to go back to elementary school.
Yeah, I figured I'd just start over.
You forgot your line.
Start from the top. 2004, every day, run to my mailbox, rip it open, hoping that this CD is there. And then one day it is. It's a Wednesday. I remember this so clearly. It's a Wednesday. I'm cold and I'm about to go basically straight from the bus to my mom's car to drive to church so she can do choir practice. And I sprint to the mailbox and lo and behold, there it is. The worst CD title of all time to tell people about the album is Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
MMHMM by Reliant K with tracks like Be My Escape, Hive 75, I So Hate Consequences, Who I Am, Hates Who I've Been. Those were sort of the big ones that everybody listened to. But this is a record that I have not only every lyric memorized, but like my brain does the transition between songs in my head for me. Like as one song ends, I'm starting the next song in my head.
Yeah.
I know every drum beat, every, you know, this album is like emblazoned on my soul.
I love that.
And I think that if you're going to listen to anything from this album, especially if you've never listened to it, listen to Who I Am, Hates Who I've Been, I think just kind of sums up the entire album in a pretty perfect way. But man, this record is like, it's still, I think I'm still chasing the high of this album at all times.
Yeah.
Trying to find something that makes me feel like that.
There is a blatant and sneaky like flex of talent in punk rock music because like the way it presents itself, at least for how I've usually listened to punk rock, it wasn't ever really my favorite, but a lot of these things I knew very well. You could have shown me, this is one of the most recognizable album covers in circles that I was in.
Sure.
You know, for most of my life. And so, but just like the absolute talent, and you talk about those harmonies too. And that's something that I've always loved. But like punk harmonies and the like singing along, everyone kind of has to, like, everyone's got like a punk rock sing along posture
for sure,
because you have to go to places that other music doesn't really have to take you in terms of like how high you're singing up. And I'm sure as someone, are you tenor, Jordan? Like,
yeah.
Do you think that, have you heard about, and I don't even know the legitimacy of it, but like how the early music you listen to ends up kind of literally forming the way that you sing? Yeah.
I have no doubt at all. And
I think that's so fun.
You know, Reliant K is firmly pop punk, even closer to the pop end. This album is full of, you know, piano and acoustic guitar. You know, this is way less punk than a lot of other stuff I got into later, but man, this album just laid a foundation for me that, like,
you're right. It's poppy. You know,
yeah. It's too good. I love it. And I think it holds up today. And Reliant K is one of the few bands from that era of my life that I would say, like, leaps the hurdle of youth group music and into, like, this is legitimately stellar album.
Yeah.
So I'm in love with this record. If you haven't listened to it, if you're a younger listener or you didn't grow up in the youth group and you skipped over your Reliant K phase, go back and listen to Mm-hmm by Reliant K. It's a quick, what is it? Like 50 minute album, which feels crazy long now compared to everything that's coming out, but you will have a blast, guaranteed.
I think formative, especially because we're talking about albums, and I'll go next. This is my transition into going now.
Talk to
me. We never talked about it, but I just, you know, we've worked together long enough that, you know.
Yeah.
And
it is work.
So really, if I was to pick like some of my favorite artists of all time, I don't know if really any of like my top 20 are showing up on this list today, like in terms of just current favorite artists. Except maybe for who I have on repeat, but even that, you know, who knows how much weight that carries right now, but like Celine Dion and Prince and Stevie Wonder and Ray Charles and James Taylor and Johnny Cash. Like, I grew up on older stuff and a lot of Motown stuff, but the very first, like, Austin City Limits unplugged of all time was Eric Clapton's. And this was in 1992.
Yeah.
And I was 4 years old, and I know that I remember hearing it then, because my parents grew up, you know, big Clapton fans. And my dad, who didn't really spend a lot, we had cassette and CD of this.
You got
it. So it was like, we're going to have it in the car and we're going to have it. And because really iPod was not even close to being popular just yet. And even the Walkman was not popular yet in the early 90s. But I specifically remember when I was maybe 6 or 7 memorizing Walkin' Blues just singing that around the house and kind of discovering a little bit
while
of like soul. While I was walking around, and that's when I started to maybe realize that I could sing, I think. And it was just like moody, and I really liked that. Because this was also a Carter that was discovering that like the most attractive things to him weren't necessarily, even though I probably, if you met me, would think I'm a pretty joyful person, and I would say I am. But there is a side to me too that is just fascinated by bleak and sorrowful, and it was so bluesy. Like, so much of Eric Clapton's Unplugged is super like upbeat. But you talk about the transitions, Jordan. The entire thing is live. So there was never really a hard stop on a track and then the next track starts. It was just like, I even remember the things that he's saying to his band and to the audience and hearing their reactions in this Clapton Unplugged. And
isn't that wild? I think you could probably listen to an album 100 times today and not memorize it the same way you did when you were a kid.
Yeah. No, there's a moment too where he's like, hold on. And they like have to restart one of the tracks because they're just like tinkering around and almost tuning. And then they just jump straight in. But, and this isn't like a super old Clapton. It's certainly well past Cream. And he was doing his own, I mean, the hits that we're listening to, all of these, the band that he was in.
I'm going to start using that just in my own life. When
well,
things
past,
are like
past
starting.
Cream.
It's past Cream. I mean,
well
it's worn out
past
as welcome.
Cream. We're working
it's
on
past
cheese.
Cream.
It's cheese now.
That's almost yogurt, honestly.
It feels, I think because I was talking myself into this, because regardless, I wanted it to be special, like what I'm sharing, because it was such a big part of my life, but it is kind of a greatest hits album. And so that doesn't feel like the most fair. Well, here was my favorite, but I mean, it had
my favorites, all of them.
Tears in Heaven,
like
Nobody Knows
ones.
You When You're Down and Out, Layla, Running on Faith, like all of this stuff is, most of this is music that he had done solo. And it's 1 hour and 2 minutes, 14 songs, and it is from front to back, just an absolute joy for me. And it's a fun one to put on like an old friend, like revisit. Cause a lot of these albums too, even with how significant they've been in my life, it doesn't mean they're on repeat, you know, even once a month sometimes, or maybe even there's a full year that I haven't listened to Eric Clapton Unplugged. And when I come back to it, I'm in the same place. And for me, Jordan, like I'm on my parents, they had it almost my entire life up to this point. Purple, worn. They had got it when they had been married. So it's already over a decade old at this point when I'm seven, well over that. Like paisley, purple bed cover that I would lay on and just like the coolness of the AC and listen to their RCA stereo.
Yeah.
It was a three changer, which felt like a huge deal for us.
Yeah, dude.
Three at a time.
Three.
I don't even have to stand up if I don't want to.
It's
just
unreal.
Go to the next one.
Yeah, just listen to it. It was the kind of thing too, like on road trips or when we were traveling and driving around, that would get me, like time would go so quickly. Like I would listen to the album and we'd already be there. Like a real special thing like that. So yeah, Eric Clapton Unplugged. And I would say like the highlight for me would be Walkin' Blues. Cause it really does feel like there's something different about when Clapton plays blues music to me, that is just like really honestly anybody. There is an interesting connection in blues music just in general. But this feels like you could walk into any bar and somebody would be doing this. Like Beale Street, Bourbon Street. You know, it feels very B.B. King, who was such a huge influence for him. And yeah, Unplugged was massive for me.
Have you ever been in middle school?
Yes.
And you, okay, great. Next question. And you feel like you, people around you don't super duper understand you. Like maybe everybody at your middle school.
Of course, I was in middle school.
Likes country music. And you're like, I don't like country music. Or they're like, I enjoy Casting Crowns. And you're like, my time enjoying Casting Crowns is well past Cream for me. I'm not going to be interested in them.
Well past Cream.
It's a little past Cream. It's kind of your time with that kind of music is past Cream. So I mean, it sounds you're like 11 now.
You weren't the body and your arms weren't reaching.
That's right. You're 11, basically, is what I'm saying.
Sure.
If so, and you got plans on Wednesday night and those plans are youth group,
then you
might also love the album Nothing Is Sound by Switchfoot as much as I do.
Dude, were we 11 when that came out?
Yeah, 2005, yeah.
Holy moly.
I was driving, bro. I had a car.
But you didn't offer to come pick us up. We didn't drive us anywhere. Man. You were probably listening to Eric Clapton, and I was trying to listen to
Clapton in over here.
Younger people stuff. I love this record. I was looking through stuff today and realized how long it's been since I've listened through
this
record.
Entire album too.
Yep.
I hope it's still good. I hope I can listen to it and not be like, oh man, it is.
Hey, okay, quick update. Listened to it about 6 weeks ago, front to back. Still great.
And it's Jordan, great. You talked about this, but maybe even more than Reliant K, like Switchfoot felt like the champion for if you really dug like Christian music and then they burst onto the pop scene. It's either that or someone's trying to claim U2 or something that's just completely random.
Yeah.
But yeah, Switchfoot.
This is a great album. Huge. They're probably the first band that I remember playing a song of theirs for my parents and my parents being like, I don't necessarily think I like this. And I was like, yes!
Is it meant to live?
Mine.
It's almost always meant to live when parents don't like it. Is that the one?
I think it may have been. Yeah.
We were meant to live.
But it's one of the first things that I remember being like, this is my music taste. This is not, this is something that I'm listening to because I want to listen to it because I like it because they understand what it's like to be 11. They know what I'm going through.
So I get it. Have we lost ourselves, dude?
I remember being like in the same age and listening to still one of my favorite Switchfoot songs ever. Happy is a yuppie word. Yuppie means. No, I know. Idea what yuppie means. And I was just like, it is a yuppie word, man. Like it's like probably yucky and stuff. Like it's probably gross.
Yeah. It feels around the time too, that you're really getting to, cause 5-year-old Carter didn't understand what walking blues were and like how like me at five singing, it's the worst feeling I've ever had. You know, it means absolutely nothing. It's just a cute party trick for when parents have friends over.
Right.
But
right.
Like when you get to be like 10 and 11,
they're like,
you start to have things that maybe don't resonate yet, but they're recognizable. And so you're like, oh my God, wow, did you see that? Did you feel that?
I'm going to get that one day.
Oh, yeah. I was thinking I was getting it now.
Of course, dude.
Right now.
The number of these songs on these albums that I was young when I listened to, and I was like, I understand the paint. I totally get it understand completely. The paint.
Did this album have 24?
No, I think that was a couple albums before this.
Which one?
Switch of It was also one of the first ones that I went and like tried to get everything. I first listened to them, like I was waiting for the new Switchfoot album to drop for sure.
Nothing has sound as golden.
Yeah.
Oh, what a good album.
Yeah.
Good choice.
Foreman's a great writer. Oh, he really is, good writer.
Man. His new stuff's good too. His new solo stuff's good too.
He's just cool, man. He's cool. All right. Well, let's take a break. Let's head to Shout Announcements and we'll come back for the back half of this discussion.
Gonna count me in?
It starts at my toes, makes me crinkle my nose. Wherever it goes, I always know it's Shout Announcements.
Dungeons.
Wait for it. He's not done. Let him finish.
Okay, we know them. And something more. Dragons.
Heard of it.
Now, open your eyes.
So slam poetry at the beginning, it felt like.
Our new D&D podcast premieres August 7th, and we could not be more excited.
It's true.
I think about this every day of my life, and I cannot wait to share it with people. We're in what I imagine to be a very similar feeling to the time leading up to the release of like a movie or something that people have worked very hard on, and it's just like, I'm ready for other people to know about this fully besides just me. I'm so ready for it. Somebody besides me and five of my friends to know about this and enjoy it. Hopefully as much as we do.
Can't wait.
Don't even know if it's possible to enjoy it as much as we do, but at least half as much would be great.
Yeah.
I want you to enjoy it so much that you start recording Imagine Dungeons.
Wow. That this,
a year from now, there's 100 Imagine Dungeons.
We are Imagine Dungeons.
Question for you. Would you rather pay $150 a month or $15 a month to work out with the same high-quality gym equipment? At Planet Fitness, you can get top-tier equipment for $15 a month. Plus, save $28 or more when you join now during our Strong Choice Sale. Our weights weigh the same, you just don't pay the same. Enjoy free fitness training and 24-hour access at most clubs, all in the judgment-free zone. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month, cancel anytime. Deal ends October 10th. See club for details. Question for you. Would you rather pay $150 a month or $15 a month to work out with the same high-quality gym equipment? At Planet Fitness, you can get top-tier equipment for $15 a month. Plus, save $28 or more when you join now during our Strong Choice Sale. Our weights weigh the same, you just don't pay the same. Enjoy free fitness training and 24-hour access at most clubs, all in the judgment-free zone. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month, cancel anytime. Deal ends October 10th. See club for details.
Album number 2 for me, because we're back.
We are.
Listen to me. Everything else, every other album I'm going to talk about, I would say, if you haven't heard it, please go listen to. I'm going to encourage you to skip this one unless you already have a history with it. So my second album that I want to talk about is Childish Gambino's debut, like full length record, Camp. So I went through and I re-listened front to back all of my albums today. And it had been a while since I had listened to Camp. Camp is, and you know, I knew this already, but Camp is an album full of some fairly problematic lyrics. I think that Mr. Glover himself would say that he does not particularly align with anymore. some language that is very much of its time. And there's, you know, there's a whole different conversation that we could have about the word choice of, you know, different eras of hip hop. And that's not the conversation we're going to have now. Because Camp is like a defining moment for me in my life. When I listened to this record, it's not the best hip hop album. It's not even the best Childish Gambino album, but, this album Camp there's just this like tenacity in this album that is just like, it feels like Donald Glover so desperate to make it and so desperate to be taken seriously as more than like Troy from Community. And you can just like taste it on every song. Just the like the gumption of just really, really wanting to be heard. And it was really
initial
the first
shock
time,
too of not being that character. But then it's like, it's so funny too, how he, even in that gumption, like there's still humor.
For sure.
Like he's still managing to pull that off and can separate it from being the character on Community.
And there's like, no, it's a great point. Cause I would say 80% of camp is well written, but cheap, like punchline raps. Like the bars are like, you know, one thing that equals another thing. Boom. That's a really, it's a great like comedy writing that has been translated to this rap album. But there's also this, like attempted sincerity that I think he actually manages to approach later on, in other projects, but in camp, there's this attempted sincerity to like sort of lay himself bare. And the album actually ends with this like real navel gazy up his own ass, like 5 minute spoken word where he's pretending to be this kid on this bus that is experiencing unrequited love on the drive home from summer camp. But it's also weirdly this like super vulnerable, like this whole album has just been bravado and me trying to be something that you guys want to listen to. I don't know. I'm a big sucker for lyricism and I'm a sucker for vulnerability in lyricism. But then also this is the album that took me past, I've always liked hip hop, even when I was so young that I couldn't get my hands on anything but Christian rap. And then, you know, in middle school and early high school pushed into listening to, you know, things like Eminem and Dr. Dre and Lil Wayne and Kanye West and you know, these artists that were doing a lot more interesting things. But Camp by Childish Gambino was like the first time, the first album that I bought and listened to all the way through and was like, whoa, there's like stuff going on here. Like he's like saying important things and he's, especially as a 16-year-old, I thought it was really important. But this album opened up my eyes to things like Good Kid, Mad City and To Pimp a Butterfly and 2014 Forest Hills Drive. Like, I don't think I would be a fan of Run the Jewels today if it wasn't for Camp. And it's just really special to me and like so of a specific era in my mind.
So good. 2001, I'm 13 years old. And I had bought some albums. I think this was a sneaky, before I knew it, Carter choosing himself moment. I'd bought albums because they were popular. And then I bought Songs in A Minor, which is Alicia Keys' first ever album.
Yeah.
There was a lot going on. Fallen was the first song I remember listening to that was modern, right? It was new when I heard it.
Right.
To everyone. And then just being like, well, this is instantly a hit. Like this, like before I even really knew how to quantify that, I'm 13 years old, right? So I don't know. I wasn't going to be able to, you know, be like, this is the next big thing. But there was something about Alicia Keys and how talented it is. And you hear her on the radio first, right? I don't first see her on this album cover or on a video or something like that. Like she's being introduced to me only hearing her. And then finding out she's also playing the piano, which is great, and already has in the midst.
That's
of
why
R&B,
her name's Alicia Keys.
That's it. Has like it's an R&B album, and she's an R&B artist. But it was like had classical vibes. And then when you go listen to this album, I bought this album. It had one of those covers that I remember a Dave Matthews Band album had too. That for a while, like CD covers, either I don't know who was doing it specifically, if it was like a specific brand or like a specific studio that was releasing them. It had a button on the side and it would open.
Oh,
it wasn't like a sleeve that you just opened up.
Yeah. There's a word for those cases, right? Aren't they called like,
there has to be, it's certainly
annoying.
Annoying. Yeah. That's it.
But cause it's really hard to get it's hard to get the lyrics and like, cause that's how you could find lyrics back in the day. And I guess you still can.
That's part of why I love vinyl now too, is I love the, like the artwork inside and the like liner notes and stuff, like taking it from just a, like, here's something to listen to like, here's something tactile and here's something to look at, like making it more of a full experience rather than just like
quick consumable, a quick like fast food of sound for my ears.
Right.
Anyway, that's my soapbox. It makes me sound like I'm well past cream.
Get back in the shed,
well past cream. Well past cream. I'm also 13. So we're like puberty time and
sure.
An early thing in the early 2000s, late 90s, you know, Gwen Stefani, Alicia Keys, Britney Spears, like Christina Aguilera, everything was to like, let's work on some abs and sure. like, let's show that on everything. Sure. And so
you gotta.
I see this album and I'm like, oh my God, she's beautiful. I listen to the music. I'm connecting with it, to it. I'm singing it to Alicia Keys because I'm like, how old is she? You know, I remember like looking her up and be like, oh my gosh, she's only like 19. Maybe I've got a shot. You know, it's like that sure. weird, but there's a specific song on there. It has Fallen. I almost did Rock With You, which really feels like a building Stevie Wonder, almost yep. entirely instrumental. But I chose A Woman's Worth because mm-hmm. to me too, it was like, I didn't care. I was a 13-year-old boy singing about a woman's worth. First of all, as if I knew anything, right, about dating, which I didn't. But also of like, this was a clear song that was being sung from the perspective of a woman. And then I'm singing it and like singing it for my friends and stuff. And by sure. this time, you know, during Unplugged with Eric Clapton is around the time I'm finding my voice and it's becoming a touch soulful. Like I'm trying to, yeah. I'm trying to do things like Motown could do. And so when I got to Woman's Worth, I was like doing runs for the first time and like really playing with that. But it was nuts. It
yeah.
blew my mind, this whole album. And it was a fun, she's been such a fun follow. And I do think Alicia Keys is one of those artists that even though she was a bit older than me when she first came out, I felt like I've grown up with.
Yeah.
Like you see the ebbs and flows of their career. And now it's like,
she's cool.
Now
man.
she's almost like she's entering like sage level for artists because she never stopped making music and in a very Pharrell way was helping other people make music. Mm-hmm. And yeah, she's just, this was a huge, massive album for me.
She was also
teenager.
On an episode of The Proud Family, which was a big deal for me as a child.
That's probably her best accomplishment.
Yeah, that's her best work, I think. The best work she did was yeah. The Proud Family.
I want to give a quick nod to my honorable mention album, which is the first movie soundtrack that I ever purchased or that I think was given. And it is the, it's Harry Gregson Williams soundtrack for the first Chronicles of Narnia movie that came out in 2005. I remember distinctly that I asked for that for Christmas and my parents were like, there's absolutely no way he means just the instrumental stuff, right? He's not a weird kid. And so aww. They got me the one that's like, music inspired by the Chronicles
hey,
of Narnia.
In Like a Lion by Reliant K still makes me cry.
It is. That's on that record.
Yes, it is.
But then I was like, listen, that's listen, why this I didn't mention it. It's a great,
yeah, this is a great I record. Just throwing something random out.
But I remember, I think even as early as like watching the first Tobey Maguire Spider-Man being like obsessed with the soundtrack of that movie, yeah. I referred to it as the cool Spider-Man violin song.
Yes.
The one that started that movie. And then
vindicated
obviously getting into like Star Wars.
Dashboard is from that movie.
It is. It's from that movie.
That
good job.
That
two for two.
Amazing. Yeah, I know movie songs.
But, and then from there getting into like Star Wars and Indiana Jones and like John Williams stuff, obviously. But I think that first movie soundtrack I ever owned was The Chronicles of Narnia. And I just absolutely loved that one. That's not my real second record, though. My real second record is Home Again by Michael Kiwanuka. Came out in 2012. Very like early Motown vibes, like kind of almost like Otis Redding, like very early Bill Withers kind of vibes. This, I heard the single from this record, Home Again, on, I think, Sirius Satellite Radio while I was on vacation with my family. And this is another, a similar kind of thing where I was just like, I like this and I'm deciding that this is something that I like, that I don't care if anybody else likes and I yeah. like it. And like when we got back from vacation, I think I was one of the like beta users for Spotify in the US. Like I was one of the first 1,000 or 10,000 people to
early
get
adopter.
Spotify in the US. I was like watching it. I knew about it from the UK and I was like, I can't wait till this comes to the States. And when Spotify got here, I was like, immediately, Michael Kiwanuka is who I'm listening to on Spotify. This is like
I love that
one of the first things, the first albums I ever like saved to my library on Spotify. But this record is so good. It definitely still holds up. I listen to this record probably three times a year, and it's fantastic. If you
if you missed it, I don't know if you guys are Michael Kiwanuka guys or not. His the song Cold Little Heart was the theme of Big Little Lies on HBO. So like he had pretty significant career after this. Like before this record came out, he supported Adele on her 2011 tour. Like he was doing well, but had a pretty significant career after this record, but it's good.
It's awesome.
Definitely check it out. It still holds up.
Dude's vibes are immaculate. Every Michael Kiwanuka song I've ever listened to just feels like I should have like a piping hot cup of coffee.
Yeah. What a good fit for Big Little Lies too.
Yeah.
That, the opening credits of that too, when it's just like West Coast shoreline, rainy, like,
yep.
Vibey.
For sure. Very good. Well, if you, put pop punk hip hop into a bucket, you're only missing one ingredient to pretty much make up all of my musical taste. And that
Weird
is
Al.
Weird Al. No, that is,
Dwight Yoakam.
I think I would probably classify it as like either like pop princesses or maybe more accurately, like girl pop, like girl power pop. Paving the way for my taste in things like Chappell Roan and Sabrina Carpenter and Billie Eilish and things like that was a 2020 album that just, I mean, not that I wasn't kind of already on this grind. Doge used to make fun of me in college saying that any song that sounded like a girl would be singing it in a smoky bar would grab my attention for sure. 2020's Big Future Lavia Nostalgia from Dua Lipa. Banger from top to bottom. Come on. If all you've heard is like Don't Start Now and Levitating from the radio,
you don't even know.
Those are great songs, but the whole album is every Dua sound.
Lipa and the baby.
Yeah, not that version. Not a huge fan of that version, but every song on the album is every sound, every note, every beat. It's all just so cool. It's like the epitome of cool. It is funky. It is groovy. If there's one instrument that comes to mind on this record, it is bass. The bass is just going bananas. And Future Nostalgia feels to me oftentimes like the promised Daft Punk sequel that never came. Feels like Random Access Memories had a baby and that baby was Future Nostalgia.
Yep.
But I still am a diehard Dua fan. She's one of my faves. And this album is like, I mean, probably a solid year. This album was on every playlist I made. I couldn't stop listening to it. And now if I listen to one song, I just have to start the whole album over and do it all again. Future Nostalgia kicks wholesale ass, Costco style.
100%. There's a podcast called La Culturistas with Matt
Bowen.
Rogers. Yeah. And Bowen Yang, and they had Dua on to talk about Future Nostalgia. And they talked about like how much that was just a lifesaver during COVID.
Because
it was
sure.
like someone decided to still be happy and just freaking go to the club. And it was Dua Lipa, because everybody else's music shifted quite a bit to be really sad. Because we also had like Folklore and things like that. And it's alternative.
Sad or angry. That was an angry year
and
for music.
Angry
too.
And sad. But Dua was like, nah, this isn't really what gets me going. And it saved a lot of people. That and Animal Crossing were going on at the same time quite a bit.
Yeah.
A lot of orange orchard picking set to like cool.
Yeah. Well, and that the bonus track version that KK collaborated on with her.
Yeah.
Was like,
I think
was
it's really cool
artist.
She
I
let that KK, that she let KK JK's take the reins on that one.
All right. KK let Dua Lipa
That's
on.
True.
Okay, let's be real about it.
That's true.
2003, The White Stripes made Elephant. This is right in the middle. They released 7 albums, of which I've heard all and owned all. And right in the middle was Elephant. And right in the middle of the album, Elephant was a song called Ball in a Biscuit. And this felt like the first time Jack White was like, hey, Meg, I just need to let it out. I just need to go ahead and do, I need to do blues. And it's so funny with the White Stripes, when you look at their genre, like if you're looking at Wikipedia, it's like garage rock, and then it's blues rock, and then it's blues garage, and it's rock blues. And then, but like blues starts to introduce itself around the time of Elephant.
Yeah.
And Jack White plays as if he doesn't care it's being recorded.
Right.
Like there's this wonderful documentary about music making, but essentially the guitar, and it's Jimmy Page, The Edge, and Jack White, and it's called It Might Get Loud. If you can find it, it's hard to find. If you can find it, watch it. But it's like The Edge was all about transforming the sound of the guitar. Jimmy Page wanted to make love to the guitar, and Jack White wanted to fight it.
Yeah.
And the dissonance. This was the first time that I listened to music and was like getting stank face. We've talked about on this podcast before of like just a real good groove on something that sounded dangerous. And Jack White was brilliant at that and continues to be. He's also one of those people that it's like no one's really trying to make the sounds that he can or they can't, you know? There's always going to be like the next Clapton, you know, it was like BB and then Clapton and then John Mayer and then maybe Gary Clark Jr. It's like we're trying to find the best guitar player that's in that vibe. But then like Jack White is just Jack White. And I loved how different he was. And I loved against the grain, but maybe not for the sake of being cool. It's just because what he liked to do.
Sure.
And then getting to know him later too was just like what a charming person. Actually, who seems very kind, but there's something that happens to him that's like inner demons or something that he's trying to release and fight back against. But there's Ball in a Biscuit is over 7 minutes long, this song. This again, Elephant is the one that has Seven Nation Army, which is probably the most recognized. It's like the We Will Rock You of our time. The whole world. Right. We know that song very well, but Ball in a Biscuit right in the middle. If you've got 7 minutes, if you haven't heard it, give it
it's
a go.
Good,
it's
man.
It's like three movements of just the only lyrics are like, let's have a ball and a biscuit and take our sweet time about it. That feels like the only thing that he says. And then what it's about though is every 90 seconds you get a 2 minute long solo that I could sing for you right now.
Yeah.
As many of the notes as I can. But
and he just also says some stuff, which I love a song where somebody's just like, I got something to say.
Yeah, yeah.
Give me the mic. Yeah. Yeah, dude, that song is gnarly, man. That was the most surprising of the three that you sent. Spoiler alert, we sent each other our favorite songs or like the most prominent songs from these albums earlier today. And I was listening through both of theirs. And that was the most surprising song of the whole set to me was this one. But it was a lovely surprise. And it makes so much sense to me, dude, because Jack White is letting his freak flag fly at all times, which is like very Carter coded. So I'm
there.
We
go.
This is true. My final pick is the album "Stories Don't End" by Dawes, which was released April 9th, 2013.
Yeah,
which Carter showed me in my truck on a 2-hour drive about special. 1 year later.
So
about
fun
10
to see
years
this.
Ago, and he was like, "Do you like the Eagles?" And I was like,
"Of course,
I'm white. Yes, of course I love them.
I have
I'm a
dad.
White boy. Of course I do.
I've been to the lake. Yes, I love the Eagles." But he was like, "How do you feel about like 70s style, like almost sad country kind of vibes?" And I was like, "Yeah, I love it." And he was like, "I think you'd like this band." And he showed me. I'm pretty sure that the song that I sent in our group text was the first one you showed me, Carter.
Maybe.
Which was From the Right Angle, which is my favorite song on that record. But it kind of helped me put a focus to a genre of music that I really love. Like this folk rock genre is probably my favorite currently, but Dawes has sort of evolved into almost like a jam band where it's like their latest record has like 8 songs on it and they're all over 8.5 minutes long. Mm-hmm. But that kind of led me forward in time to things like Theo Katzman, who I absolutely adore. And it led me backwards in time to things like Jackson Browne and things, like James Taylor, like those kind of early Laurel Canyon guys who I absolutely love. But Dawes kind of was the linchpin for, I feel like my, hopefully not final, hopefully I like more stuff, of a different genre later, but kind of my most recent, like this is the genre of music that I like the best kind of feeling.
Sure.
Yeah.
Isn't that a great feeling too? When like something that either has never worked for you before and a new version works or just something you've never really given the time of day. And then just the right thing, it feels like the floodgates open and you're like, there's
just like
so
unlocks
many
it.
Of these.
Like it clicks. Yeah,
yeah,
definitely.
Yeah,
that's great.
Doge, I feel like that was the first one, and then I hit you with like ballad. Like I wanted you to hear the upbeat stuff, and
I think
probably
you
like
hit me
Million
with that
Dollar
one.
Bill.
I was about to say Million Dollar Bill was absolutely the second one you showed me from.
Yeah. Oh, yep. How fun!
So many memories with Carter sitting in a car listening to things, because Random Access Memories, the like week it came out, I think we listened to that whole thing front to back in your Honda.
Oh,
yeah.
Bro, yes. And we were probably going to Applebee's and two people were in my trunk because I just wanted to be able to take everybody in one car.
Yeah.
I rode with you in your Honda one time when you were like, I got to get my oil changed. I was like, sick, I'll come with. And we just like rode to like get your oil changed.
Yes.
Do you remember one day when the three of us bumped into each other on the quad and all three of us were like, I could eat Chicken Express right now. And then we just.
Yep.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Just went.
A crazy story. Like it's just going to Chicken Express. But the fact that none of us were together and we were just like, hey man, what's up? Think about Chicken Express today. I could go. That's college. Just like, I got class, but I'll skip it. I'll just go to Chicken Express. For real. Right
sure.
Now.
Yeah.
I'm Why still not? Trying to skip class at all times. That's sort of my secret.
There is a makeup day for the test. So yeah.
I'll yeah.
Go.
We'll go.
I wish there was something I could skip right now that gave me the same sense of being in control and sticking it to the man that skipping class gave me in college.
Dude, make plans with people you don't like very much and then bail on them. It's the same feeling.
Dude, can I go with our repeat album first?
Yeah.
It's already been mentioned, but Dua. So like,
yeah, man.
Radical Optimism did not disappoint, in my honest opinion. I think it's not quite Future Nostalgia, but I think Nothing will be. And I think that's totally fine. I think Dua is still leaning into what she likes and still giving herself plenty of room as she always had. She's always seems like such a cerebral entire package kind of person.
She's
and
so cool, dude.
She's incredibly creative and the stuff that she's done here is great. I highly recommend the extended version. She's released an album that all of the tracks now are like 5+ minutes. And so you're getting extra verses and extra builds and all that kinds of
I've
stuff.
I've been listening to that. Yep.
One of my favorite things about Radical Optimism is she has high influences of several of my favorite artists. There's some Lady Gaga in there. There's some Prince in there. There's some Celine Dion.
She samples
for sure.
A lot, right?
She does. How long? The song How Long immediately goes into the kind of vocals we've really never heard from Dua because she kind of keeps it low key, like early Rihanna, like just trying to be like, hey, I'm just here for the beat and I'm just like writing it. But she takes center stage with her voice and she does an amazing job.
She has an incredible voice.
Radical Optimism. Very, 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 very good.
Yeah. I've had the album Losing What We Love by Knuckle Puck on repeat for like since October of last year when it came out. Knuckle Puck is a direct like reach through a time portal and grasp hands with, you know, 12-year-old Jordan just listening to early Under Oath and Newfound Glory and A Day to Remember and like all the punky borderline metal, like alt punk, pop punk bands that I could get my hands on. And this album feels like it in a good way. It feels like it was plucked straight out of 2009 and then given modern production. That's exactly what this album feels like. It is fun. It is sad, but in that emo way that never feels like it's too threatening or serious. It's like safe sadness in a lot of those songs.
Sad, but not a bummer.
Yeah.
You know?
Right. Totally. And man, it's just so much fun. If you at all
it's a good record.
Are interested in pop punk emo throwback vibes, you should listen. Losing What We Love, Knuckle Puck. It's fantastic.
Also listen to Bill Murray.
Yeah.
Not the guy, the band.
Yeah. Bill Murray's great.
Mine on repeat right now is the latest, EP from Theo Kandel. Found him on TikTok, and the latest EP is, I'm not sure if it's a single release, if he's going to release more. I believe it's just a single right now. Hopefully he's got a new record coming out, but the latest single is called The Painters, and he said he deliberately tried to make something that sounds like Accidentally in Love because of how much that song slaps, and he did a good job. He's a great lyricist, and the production is super fun and super slick on this and the other two songs that are part of the single. I've been following him for a while and I'm very excited about sort of a newer, a bit more James Taylor direction he's taking with this release.
Yeah.
Give me that.
Good stuff. Oh, I have an idea. Let's end our episode today with our favorite song written for a movie.
Ooh.
Don't forget Imagine Dungeons coming at you in August. August 7th will be the release of the first episode, and we are, I mean, just going nuts over here. Can't wait for you to listen to it. We hope. We don't even hope. We just know you'll love it. If you listen to it, you're going to love it. It's so much fun. So make sure you stay ready.
And for that. I will say, if you don't know anything about Dungeons and Dragons,
that's fine.
That's okay. You can still listen to it.
It's just like, we're just telling a story. We're acting. It's like a teleplay. Radio play.
Pretending.
A radio play.
We're just playing pretend.
It's like, what was it? How War of the Worlds, everybody thought that it was a real broadcast for a little bit. People got scared aliens were invading.
Yeah.
It'll be the same thing, but just with Dungeons and Dragons.
Sorry, Orson Welles.
No, HG.
Well, supply?
Orson Welles is reading it, right?
I think it was Welles from The Bachelor.
I thought it was Welles Fargo. For Two Chunks and a Hunk, I'm Jordan. And although it is tempting, incredibly tempting, for me to say accidentally in love, because it is just that good. I mean, I do think I'm going to go Vindicated by Dashboard Confessional.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
I mean, it's a good song, man.
It is a good song.
Oh, wait. Also, That Thing You Do exists. That song only exists in a movie.
Watch out.
Wow.
I'm Doge. Remember Me from Coco feels like it should be better. It should exist before or after or apart from that movie. That is such a good song.
Great song. That's what's that called? Diegetic music, where it exists in universe.
Yeah.
Like the band
this is what I have for you as well, is diegetic music.
Okay.
So I don't know if I'm quite a little monster, but I love Lady Gaga.
Here we go.
And in A Star Is Born, because it gets caught in so many different iterations, you know, Barbara Streisand, Judy Garland, and now here comes Lady Gaga. There's a song that she wrote all the songs for that. There's a song called Always Remember Us This Way.
Yeah.
That is one of her best songs ever. And it gets completely lost.
Didn't Lucas Nelson also write for that? Didn't Willie Nelson's son also write? Mm-hmm. I thought they wrote together, right?
Cool. Yeah. But yeah, this is one that they've credited to her on the A Star Is Born soundtrack. And it's like the transition of her in her two different roles. She's like right before she goes solo, which Annie, the person that she plays that does all these pop songs, is amazing. Like, she can do anything, but Always Remember Us This Way is very good.
That is such a good song. Dude, I forgot about that song.
Honestly, can we honorable mention to A Thousand Years by... was it Christina Perry? What's the Twilight song?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
This song is so good.
That's a great song.
That song is so much better. Live.
She opened for Ed Sheeran. Yeah.
Is that the biggest gulf between quality of film and quality of song for film?
Maybe not. I bet it's not.
Song There's going to be something out there. I mean, Armageddon, Don't Want to Miss a Thing is a pretty big gulf.
Yes,
as well.
I definitely thought of that.
Yeah, but that's a better, movie.
Screamer.
Yeah, I'd rather watch Twilight, though.
This country was built on a distinctly American work ethic. But today, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries, sending away good jobs and diminishing our capability to make things. American Giant is pushing back against that tide. They make the kind of high-quality clothing staples you need for a comfortable, stylish, and active summer wardrobe. Like vintage-style tees, tough tank tops, breathable polos, lightweight sweatshirts, shorts, and so much more. All made right here in the USA, from growing the cotton to adding the final touches. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs for seamsters, cutters, and factory workers in towns and cities across the United States. And it's about more than an income. Jobs bring pride, purpose. They stitch people together. Support America's workers and get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.
At Humana, our Medicare Advantage plans give you coverage and care you can count on, along with guided support to help you feel your best. You could have a plan with a $0 premium or an all-in-one plan that may include medical and prescription coverage, as well as routine dental, vision, and hearing. Learn more at GetHumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal.